Chapter 1. Alarums and Excursions. The Primarch's summons found Brother Redemptor Nemiel at the 7th chapter's forward base in the Huldaran foothills, just 20 kilometers south of the planetary capital. Dawn was only 2 hours away, and the chapter's battle brothers were completing their final checks on their weapons and equipment. The last survivors of the Gordians' battered heavy divisions had finally halted their long, bitter retreat and decided to make a stand amid the steep iron-grey hills. The Dark Angels sensed that this would be the last battle in the months-long campaign to bring the stubborn world into compliance. It had been a hectic night on the windswept plains. The 7th chapter had travelled 200 kilometres on the previous day, harrying the Gordian rearguard, and there was little time to prepare for a dawn assault against fortified enemy positions. Nemiel had spent much of the time shuttling back and forth between the chapter's four assembly areas, speaking with each of the squads, evaluating their readiness, and when asked, receiving their battle oaths in the name of the Lion and the Emperor. He had only just reported to Chapter Master Turanen and certified the chapter fit for combat when the message was sent down from the fleet, Brother Redemptor Nemiel and squad to report aboard the flagship immediately. Transport en route. The Stormbird touched down less than 15 minutes later, just as the Imperial's preliminary bombardment began to fall on the enemy's forward positions. Surprised and somewhat bemused, Nemiel could only clasp hands with Turanen and accept the Chapter Master's battle oath, then watched the 7th Chapter's armoured vehicles rumble northward without him and his men. Within minutes, the dropship was climbing skyward again. After a single orbit of the war-torn planet, climbing high over its storm-tossed oceans and soaring white-capped mountain ranges, the Stormbird's pilot had adjusted his course and was closing on the Imperial squadrons anchored above Gordia IV, only to be shunted into a temporary holding pattern while the battle barge completed a resupply evolution and cleared its embarkation deck. After all the haste and urgency, Nemiel was left to sit and wait, contemplating the grey-green world below and wondering how the battle was faring for Turanen and his chapter. A half hour passed. Nemiel listened idly to the vox chatter over the fleet command net and turned his attention to the constellation of warships and transports that surrounded the Primarch's battle barge. He could remember a time, 50 years past, when the 4th Expeditionary Fleet numbered no more than 7 vessels. At Gordia IV, the flagship was accompanied by 25 ships of various types, and that was barely a third of the fleet's total complement. The remainder were organized into discrete battle groups that were in action across the length and breadth of the Shield Worlds, fighting the Gordian League and their degenerate Xenos allies. The warships anchored around the flagship constituted the fleet's reserve squadrons, plus vessels damaged in recent actions against the League's small but powerful space navy. Tenders were pulled alongside the Grand Cruisers Iron Duke and Duchess Arbellatrice, while repairs were underway on their battle-scarred flanks. Plasma torches twinkled coldly in the dark as hundreds of servitors repaired damaged hull plating and wrecked weapons emplacements. After several minutes of idle study, Nemiel noticed frantic activity around a dozen other warships as well. Cargo lifters and supply shuttles were flying back and forth from the fleet's huge replenishment vessels, delivering everything from reactor fuel to ration tins at breakneck speed. For the first time, he felt a twinge of uneasiness, wondering if the League had managed to launch a surprise counteroffensive that had caught the Legion off guard. When the Stormbird was finally granted priority clearance to land, the tension Nemiel felt in the air of the cavernous embarkation deck only served to deepen his unease. Harried-looking officers and ratings were hard at work organizing hundreds of tons of supplies and getting them stowed as rapidly as possible. Shouted orders and angry tirades from impatient petty officers were drowned out by the loud crackle of the deck's magnetic barrier as 2 more Stormbirds came aboard in rapid succession and touched down directly behind Nemiel's ship. The dropship's assault ramp quivered beneath the weight of armored feet, and Brother Sergeant Cole led his squad out onto the deck. The Terran had removed his helmet and clipped it to his belt, and he surveyed the frenetic activity with a bemused scowl. Nemiel glanced over at Cole as the squad leader joined him at the base of the ramp. "What do you make of all this?" he asked. Cole shook his head. The sergeant was one of the oldest surviving Astartes in the Legion, having fought in the very first battles of the Great Crusade 200 years before. His broad face was all flat planes and jutting angles, creased with old scars and weathered by centuries of hard fighting in the service of the Emperor. His black hair hung in tight braids close to his bull-like neck, and four polished service studs gleamed above his right brow. When he spoke, his voice was a gravelly basso.
"Never seen anything like it," Cole said warily. "Something's happened, that's for certain. The fleet looks like they're getting ready for a fight."
The embarkation deck's containment field crackled again, admitting two more Stormbirds onto the increasingly crowded deck. Assault ramps deployed, and more Astarte squads, veterans one and all, judging by the battle honours decorating their breastplates and pauldrons, disembarked with the same mix of bemusement and professional alacrity. An alert tone echoed from vox speakers set in the overhead.
"All squad leaders and command staff report to the Strategium immediately."
Nemiel frowned up at the overhead. Even the bridge announcer's voice sounded unusually anxious.
"Everyone seems to know something we don't," he muttered.
Cole shook his head.
"Welcome to the Great Crusade, brother," he replied.
Nemiel chuckled, shaking his head in mock exasperation. He'd fought beside Cole and his squad many times over the past few decades, and had learned to appreciate his sarcastic wit, but this time Nemiel couldn't help but notice the faint undercurrent of tension in the veteran sergeant's voice.
"Come on," he said,
setting off towards the lifts at the far side of the embarkation deck.
"Let's go find out what all this is about."
Human crewmen stood to attention as Nemiel passed, and fellow Astartes bowed their heads respectfully. 50 years of hard campaigning had left their mark on the young Calibanite. His armour, fresh from the forges of Mars a half century ago, was now scarred and blemished from countless battlefields. His left pauldron, replaced by the Legion armourers after the combat drop on Cyboris, had been engraved with battle scenes commemorating his chapter's charge against the Cyborian hunter-killers. Parchment ribbons fluttered from the edges of his right pauldron, affixed with stamps of melted gold and silver to commemorate deeds of valour against humanity's many foes. The cloak of a senior initiate hung about his shoulders, edged with double bands of red and gold to mark his rank in the higher mysteries, a tradition from the old order on Caliban that had been implemented by their Primarch. He'd grown his hair long, like his Terran brothers, and wore it in tight braids bound by silver wire. But of all the awards and accolades that Nemiel had earned over the last half century, it was the gleaming staff clutched in his right hand that he was proudest of. The Crozius Aquilum marked him as one of the Legion's select order of chaplains, charged with maintaining the fighting spirit of their battle brothers and preserving the ancient traditions of their brotherhood. It had been 10 years since he'd been nominated for the position following the grim siege of Barrakhan, when his chapter had been cut off by the Greenskins and trapped at Firebase Endriago for 18 months. By the end, they were fighting off the alien assaults with fists and pieces of sharpened steel scavenged from bombed-out strongpoints, but through it all, Nemiel had never wavered. He taunted the Greenskins relentlessly and exhorted his brothers to acts of ever greater defiance in the face of insurmountable odds. When a Greenskin's crude axe had shattered his knee, he'd grabbed the beast by one of its tusks and kicked it to death, just for spite. When the last line of defence was broken, he'd stood his ground in the face of a massive Xenos champion and fought an epic duel that had given the chapter time to launch a counterattack that finally exhausted the last of the enemy's strength. The next day, when relief forces finally managed to fight their way through to the firebase, Nemiel had stood on the ramparts and cheered with the rest of his brothers. It took several minutes before he registered the slaps on his shoulders and back and realized that the chapter wasn't cheering for victory. They were cheering for him. Not long after, the chapter voted unanimously for him to take the place of Brother Redemptor Barthiel, who had fallen during the darkest hours of the siege. The whole thing still seemed a bit unreal to him, a full decade later. Him? A paragon of the Legion's ideals? As far as he was concerned, he'd just been too angry and too stubborn to let a bunch of dirty greenskins get the better of him. In private moments, he'd hold up the Crozius and shake his head in bemusement, as though it belonged to someone else. This should have been Zahariel's, he'd often think to himself. He was the idealist, the true believer.
I just wanted to be a knight. Not a month went by that he didn't wonder what his cousin was doing back on Caliban, and he regretted not saying farewell back on Sir Roche. The departure of Luther and the rest had been sudden, almost businesslike, and at the time Nemiel had assumed, like everyone else, that they would be back with the fleet before long. But Johnson had never spoken of them again. He no longer even read the regular dispatches from Caliban, relegating that task to members of his staff. Luther and the rest seemed to have been entirely banished from the Primarch's mind, and as the years lengthened into decades, rumour and speculation had begun to circulate through the ranks. Some suggested a falling out between Johnson and Luther over the near disaster at Sir Roche, of old jealousies and petty enmities rising to the fore. Others speculated that Luther and the rest bore the blame for allowing the Sir Roche bomb aboard the Invincible Reason, which led to sometimes heated debates between the Terran and Calibanite factions within the Legion. Primarch Johnson made no attempt to address any of the rumours, and over time, they were forgotten. No one spoke of the exiles much anymore, except as a cautionary tale to new initiates. Once you fell from grace with Lionel Johnson, you were never likely to rise again. I should send Zahariel a letter, he thought absently. He'd started several over the years, only to set them aside as the chapter prepared to deploy to yet another conflict. Then he'd begun his tutelage as a chaplain, which occupied every spare moment that wasn't spent fighting or training to fight, and before he knew it, the time had just slipped by. He resolved to try again, just as soon as they'd gotten the current crisis under control. Whatever the situation was, Nemiel thought grimly, he was certain that Johnson and the Fourth Fleet were up to the task. The battle barge's strategium, which overlooked the warship's bridge and served as the combat control centre for both the Invincible Reason and the Fourth Fleet as a whole, was already filled to capacity by the time that Nemiel arrived. The human officers on deck bowed their heads and stepped aside as he and Cole went to join their brethren by the strategium's primary hololith tank. The mood on deck was tense. Unease showed on the faces of the Astartes and the human officers, no matter how much they tried to conceal it. Some tried to mask their concerns with rough banter. Others withdrew, focusing their attentions on their data slates or receiving reports from their subordinates via Voxbead. But the signs were there for a trained redemptor to read. Moments after Nemiel's arrival, a stir went through the assembly. The assembly stiffened to attention as Lionel Johnson, Primarch of the First Legion, appeared at the entrance to the Strategium. Like all of the Emperor's sons, Johnson was the product of the most advanced genetic science known to mankind. He hadn't been born. He had been sculpted, at the cellular level, by the hands of a genius. His hair was shining gold, falling in heavy curls to his broad shoulders, and his skin was pale and smooth as alabaster. Green eyes caught the light and seemed to glow from within like polished emeralds. His gaze was sharp and penetrating, laser-like in its intensity. Normally, Johnson preferred to wear a simple white surplice bound with a belt of gold chains, which only served to accentuate his towering physical presence and genetically perfect physique. This time, however, he was clad for war, cased in the intricately crafted power armor that had been gifted to him by the Emperor himself. Ornate gold scrollwork had been worked into the curved ceramite plates, detailing forest scenes from distant Caliban. Across the breastplate was a vivid depiction of a younger Johnson wrestling with a fearsome Calibanite lion. The monster's back was bowed, and its paws raked furiously at the sky, its neck strained to breaking point by the Primarch's powerful arms. At his hip, Johnson carried the Lion Sword, a glorious blade forged on Terra by the Emperor's own master armourers. A heavy cloak of emerald green swirled at the Primarch's back, and he walked with a portentous tread of an avenging angel. Voices fell silent at Johnson's approach. Nemiel watched the expressions of man and Astartes alike change at the sight of the Primarch. Even to this day, after fighting alongside Johnson for so many decades, Nemiel still felt a bit awed every time he stood in the Lion's presence. He'd often said to Cole and the rest that it was a good thing the Emperor had dedicated himself to ridding the human race of religious superstition. Otherwise, it would be all too easy to look upon the Primarchs and worship them like gods. For his part, Johnson seemed completely unaware of his effect on his subordinates, or else was so accustomed to it that he simply accepted it as a fundamental fact, like light or gravity. He acknowledged senior officers and long-time veterans like Cole with somber nods before taking his place at the Strategium circular hololith projector. Johnson fitted a data crystal into the projector's inload socket, paused scarcely a moment to marshal his thoughts, and began to speak.
"Well met, brothers,"
Johnson began. His normally melodious voice was subdued, like someone who had just been dealt a terrible blow.
"I regret to have called you away from your duties, but this morning we received grim tidings from the Emperor."
He paused, meeting the eyes of the officers and Astartes closest to him.
"The War Master, Horus, and his Legion have renounced their oaths of allegiance, along with Primarch Angron's World Eaters, Mortarion's Death Guard, and Fulgrim's Emperor's Children. They have virus-bombed Istvan III, the most heavily populated world in the system, and have rendered it lifeless. An estimated 12 billion human lives have been lost."
Gasps of shock and cries of dismay were uttered by many of the fleet officers. Nemiel scarcely heard them. He felt only the rushing of blood in his temples and the awful coldness that seemed to spread like a wound through his chest. The Primarch's words echoed in his mind, but they didn't make any sense. They couldn't make sense. His mind refused to accept them. He turned to Cole. The veteran sergeant's expression was stoic, but his eyes were glassy with shock. The rest of the Astartes also bore the news in silence, but Nemiel could see the words sinking into them like a torturer's knife. The Redemptor shook his head slowly, as though he could banish the awful knowledge from his head. The Primarch waited patiently for the assembly to regain a sense of order before continuing. He keyed a series of controls on the side of the hololith projector, and the device flickered into life. A detailed three-dimensional map of the Eridan sector flickered into existence before the assembly. Imperial systems were displayed in bright blue, while at their heart the Istvan system pulsed an angry red. Johnson pressed another set of keys, and many of the star systems surrounding Istvan changed color in an irregularly expanding sphere. Nemiel and many others in the assembly were shocked to see a score of systems switch from blue to red, and scores more flicker from blue to a dull gray.
"The reasons for the War Master's rebellion are unclear, but the magnitude of his actions cannot be overstated. News of the rebellion has spread like a cancer through the sector and beyond,"
Johnson said,
"reigniting old tensions and territorial ambitions. Some governors have openly declared for Horus, while others see the rebellion as an opportunity to build petty empires of their own. In the short space of just 2.5 months, Imperial authority in the Ultima Segmentum has been severely compromised, and dissent is beginning to spread into Segmentum Solar as well."
Johnson paused, studying the pattern of unrest represented on the map, as though it held secrets that only he could see.
"It's likely that agents loyal to the War Master are operating all across both segmenta, helping fuel the growing dissent. Note how the outbreaks of lawlessness spread from system to system along the most stable warp routes leading back to Terra, the direction from which any large-scale retaliation is certain to originate."
Nemiel took a breath, drawing on the psycholinguistic rotes he'd learned in training to suppress his emotions and focus on the data suspended in the air above the projector. To his eyes, the instances of revolt in the Ultima Segmentum appeared haphazard. But Lionel Johnson was famous within the Legion, if not elsewhere, for his strategic genius. He had an almost intuitive ability to understand the balance of forces in a conflict and predict its course with stunning accuracy. It made him one of the Emperor's finest generals, second only to Horus himself, and in the opinion of many Dark Angels, perhaps even greater than that.
"As soon as word of the War Master's rebellion reached Terra, the Emperor began assembling a punitive force to confront the rebel legions and take Horus into custody,"
Johnson continued gravely.
"According to the dispatch we received, a full 7 legions, led by Ferus Manus and the Iron Hands, are en route to Istvan. But it will be at least another 4 to 6 months before they arrive. In the meantime, Horus has redeployed his forces to Istvan 5 and is in the process of fortifying the planet in anticipation of the coming attack."
Out of the corner of his eye, Nemiel saw Cole fold his arms across his chest. He glanced at the Terran sergeant and saw a bemused frown cross his weathered face.
The next few months are going to be crucial for Horus and the Rebel Legions, Johnson said. The War Master knows that the Emperor will respond with all the force he has available. I now believe that our deployment to the Shield Worlds was part of an effort to scatter the Imperium's most loyal servants as far as possible, in order to minimize the number of legions he would have to face at any given time. Even so, a strike force of 7 full legions poses a dire threat to Horus's survival. Surviving a planetary siege from such a force, let alone defeating it, will require transforming Istvan V into a veritable fortress world. That will require an enormous amount of supplies and equipment on very short notice. The sort of materiel that only a fully operational forge world can provide.
The Primarch adjusted the controls on the projector, and the sector view blurred, focusing in closely on the Eridan subsector and its neighbors. One system, very close to Istvan, stubbornly blue in a sea of gray and red, was suddenly highlighted.
This is the Tanagra system, located at the edge of the adjoining Ulthoris subsector. As you can see, it is only 52.7 light-years from Istvan and lies along the most stable warp route to and from Terra. It also happens to be one of the most heavily industrialized systems in the entire sector, with a Class 1 ultra-forge world named Diamat and more than 24 mining outposts and refineries scattered throughout the system. Historically, Tanagra was rediscovered by Horus's Legion and became compliant relatively early in the Great Crusade. It has been a key logistical center for the region ever since. Johnson indicated the highlighted system with a thoughtful nod.
It is no exaggeration to say that whoever controls the Tanagra system might well determine the fate of the entire Imperium. Murmurs spread through the assembly. The Primarch's voice carried easily over them all.
The War Master's treachery caught us all off guard, just as he intended it to do, Johnson said.
His voice took on a cold, angry edge.
At this stage, our forces are too deeply enmeshed here in the Shield Worlds to respond quickly to Horus's treachery. The best estimates of my staff indicate that it would take us nearly 8 months to conclude our offensive operations, even on an emergency basis, and reposition ourselves for a strike against Istvan. Even if we could move more quickly, Horus's agents would be able to alert the War Master in time to organize a counter-move.
Johnson paused, once more surveying the shocked faces surrounding him, and his lips quirked in a predatory smile.
A small, hand-picked force, however, might accomplish what an entire legion cannot.
He pointed to the Tanagra system.
Diamat is the key. If we can keep its industrial wealth from Horus's hands, he and his legions will be as good as beaten.
The murmurs among the assembly grew to an excited buzz. Suddenly, Nemiel understood the frenetic activity occupying much of the fleet, and the Primarch's summons from the planet below. He'd been chosen, along with all the other Astartes who'd come aboard. A fierce pride swelled in his breast. Looking about, he could see that many of his brethren were feeling it as well. Johnson raised a gauntleted hand for silence.
As many of you already know, I've issued orders for many of our reserve squadrons to resupply and prepare for immediate deployment. I've also summoned 200 veterans, the most I feel we can spare, from our chapters on the planet below. As you're well aware, the Shield Worlds campaign is at a critical juncture. We've been fighting the Gordians and their degenerate Xenos allies for months, and this is our best opportunity to break the alliance once and for all. My senior staff will be transferring aboard the Grand Cruiser Decimator within the hour and will remain behind to conclude operations here in the Shield Worlds as quickly as possible. I will personally lead the expedition to Diamat with a battle group of 15 warships. We will travel light, leaving the slower tenders and supply vessels behind, and trust that we will be able to replace our stores when we reach Tanagra. Our navigator believes that if current warp conditions persist, we should reach Diamat within 2 months.
Johnson folded his arms and stared at the fleet officers.
One thing more. As far as the fleet, indeed, the rest of the Legion is concerned. The Invincible Reason and the ships of the battle group are withdrawing for refit and repair at Carnassus. We'll be taking a number of damaged vessels along with us to maintain the ruse. Secrecy is vital. Horus is certain to have agents in the region keeping watch on us, and they must not suspect where we're really headed until it's too late to do anything about it. Is that clear? The officers responded at once with nods and muttered assents. Nemiel and the Astartes said nothing. It went without saying that they would comply. The Primarch nodded curtly. The battle group will weigh anchor and depart for the system jump point in 10 hours and 45 minutes. All ongoing repairs, resupply efforts and equipment checks must be complete by that time. No exceptions. Johnson turned his attention back to the Hololith projector. I expect by now that the War Master has dispatched a raiding fleet to Diomat to begin plundering the necessary supplies, he said. When we reach the Tanagra system, 8 weeks from now, we need to arrive fully prepared to fight.